From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour as we are in the late stages of our 22nd year. Turn the corner in October, and we'll be into our 23rd year on the air. And appreciate all of you, the listeners, all the wonderful guests we've had, and the wonderful underwriters who support this program. And, of course, the vision of Bishop Wiegand at its start, and the continued vision of and support of Bishop Soto for the Bishop's Hour. So we'd like to thank everybody for that. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. We're rejoicing and glad to have Tony Ryan on the phone with us. Tony is the marketing and sales director for the wonderful Ignatius Press. Tony, good day to you.
Hey, Bob. Hello to you. Thank you. Good to hear from you, and good to be talking to you today.
Yes, it's wonderful. You know, I mean, as hard as this pandemic has been, we feel very fortunate we've been able to stay on the air and use all the modern technology to keep bringing the good news to people. And you guys at Ignatius Press are certainly part of that good news.
Well, we're really fortunate, and I've been really fortunate, especially to be involved with this great apostolate, this great work, this great publishing company founded 43 years ago by Father Joseph Fessio, and he's still leading us. And so we get to publish all these great books, work with great authors, license or produce great films. So it's a real blessing for us just to be a part of it. It's especially been for me. I've been here for 40 years, and it's amazing.
You started in kindergarten.
Kindergarten, yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, before the age of reason, they hired me.
So, I'm holding this book, and it's heavy. I mean, it's a thick volume. Saint Therese of Lisieux, and there's about 16 ways that I've heard her name pronounced and where she's from pronounced. So I'll let you do it.
Well, I mean, I just use the American pronunciation, Saint Therese of Lisieux. I know some people say Lisieux, yep. Probably the French mm-hmm. pronunciation, but we're in America, so I just,
I don't see any R's in it.
Yeah, that's the French pronunciation. But the title of the book is Saint Therese of Lisieux, and the subtitle is Living on Love. And as you say, it's a big book. It's really a combination of it's a stunning book. It really is a stunning book. It's a combination of photos and artwork along with incredible in-depth text. And, you know, we've published quite a few books on St. Therese over the years. This is easily the greatest book we've ever done on her, and in my opinion, the greatest book I've ever seen on St. Therese of Lisieux. The reason for that is it goes through her whole life, her whole spirituality. You learn all about her family. You learn all about what was going on in the church at that time. It just encompasses everything about her. But then it has, so you get all that. So it's not a coffee table book. It's got incredible detail and incredible text and depth to it. But it then has over 150 stunning photos that go with it, and all these sidebars on history and geography and themes of the book and of her life. It's just a gorgeous work. I think it'd be a great gift for Christmas, for example. But oh, yeah. It really is something should be given and read any time of the year. You know, Therese of Lisieux is, she's very popular, but the details of her life and her spirituality are really still not that widely known. I mean, people know kind of general things about her, but she's still somewhat of a mystery, even to those who consider themselves her followers. And this book will kind of break open that mystery of what made her so great. How is it that this 24-year-old woman, she died when she was 24, lived a hidden life. Her own sisters weren't even aware of how great of a saint she was. You know, how did she become such a great saint? And what's her message for us? And that's what this book reveals to us, and how we can become like her. That's her goal. That's the goal of this book, is to help us ordinary folks, you know, that's what she was. She was one of us, become a saint. And it's basically following her message of living on love. That was the core of her life, or the little way of spiritual childhood is another description. And, you know, so she wanted to help us all follow that path. And so John Paul II realized that she had an incredibly timely and important message for the church, and he made her a doctor of the church. Just think about that. She's a doctor of the church, this 24-year-old Carmelite woman. It's just her whole story is amazing. And this book, I think, you know, really grasps that and presents that in a way that no other book we've ever seen on Therese does that.
What does that mean, doctor of the church?
So a doctor of the church is someone that the church, who has a special charism, a special spirituality, a special kind of teaching that's somewhat new for the church, that's never really been presented in that way for the church. And the church recognizes that as something that is special, you know, given from God through this person, this saint. And so in Therese's case, it is this little way of spiritual childhood that, you know, she realized herself that she was given this gift, that this was her mission. This was a gift that came to the church through her. And she knew when she was dying that this was going to be her mission in heaven. And she said, I will spend my heaven doing good on earth. And the good she wants to do and she continues to do is to spread the spirituality of the little way. That, you know, we can all be saints in the ordinary details of our daily life, just like Therese. You know, what did she do that was great in the eyes of the world? Not much. But everything she did with great love, true love, deep love, passionate love for Christ and for her fellow man, you know, the sisters, her family, anyone that she encountered. It was all about love, and that's really what makes anybody a saint. So that's, you know, that's what makes someone a doctor of the church, and there are not a lot of doctors, or there's maybe 20.
Mm-hmm.
And the church does not declare them lightly or easily or without great consideration, and that their message is something that's unique and timely and, you know, something that can make a deep impact and really does come from God. And Therese of Lisieux is an example of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the appeal, and I've tried to put my finger on it. You know, you say, you know, hidden away, 24 years old when she died. And really, truly, one of the most popular saints in the church. It's like how's that possible? And what did she do? You know, what did she save a kingdom? Did she, you know, what did she do? You know, and it is telling us all that who live ordinary lives, as so many of us do, that it's available to us in our ordinariness.
I think that's why she's so popular, is because people recognize in Therese that she's one of us.
Yep.
We can be like her. We can be a saint like her. But, you know, and she's not, she has this title of the little flower, but, you know, so that she's misunderstood. You know, she's not, she's tough. She's made of iron, this woman. There's a love there that's super strong, you know, and it's passionate. She had a passionate love for Christ. And that's what made her a saint. That's what makes anyone a saint, is, you know, Jesus Christ is the King of love. He deserves our love. And so that was her whole life, was everything for Christ, everything she did, no matter how small.
Mm-hmm.
And she suffered a lot. I mean, yeah. When you read this book, if you don't really know her life, you see that she had a lot of suffering from the time she was a little girl, when her mother died when she was about 4 years old,
right.
You know. And then her separation of her older sister was like her second mother, who left her to become a Carmelite. And then all these separations she had in her life. She was very sensitive when she was a girl, so she suffered a lot from that sensitive nature. When she was in the monastery, she had tuberculosis. She had huge suffering. She had a dark night of the soul at the end of her life that lasted, you know, quite a long time. I mean, she had all kinds of suffering. And, you know, you find out this is a real strong woman, real strong woman.
So I was struck, you know, I was thinking about how long ago she lived, et cetera, and you know, you kind of forget that they've had photographs for quite a while. You know, I still think of photographs as a modern invention. You know, and I was just stunned by not just the photographs but the quality of the photographs. And I mean, you're not just seeing a depiction of her; you're seeing her.
Yeah, exactly. And
it's,
you know,
just
her
those...
sister Celine was a photographer.
Mm-hmm.
So Therese died in 1897, so we're talking, you know, over 100 years ago,
yeah.
120, 30 years ago. And as you say, you know, photography was was available back then, and actually some pretty good photography, and this book is a good example of that. So you have these really great photos of her and her family and of the Carmelite sisters there and others at this time of, in the church. And they're stunning photos, and they're great photos. And you really kind of, you know, a lot of saints we don't have photos of because they lived before photography, but there is something about photos, as you say, that really help us connect with them, really help us to get to know them, really help us to develop a kind of relationship with them. And again, that's the purpose of Trez, that's the purpose of this book, is to develop this relationship with this great saint so that we can follow her program of living on love and we can learn it from her. This book will help you to learn it, I guarantee. If you read this book and you meditate on it, which is easy to do, it's an easy book to read and meditate, it's fun. I mean, I pick it up all the time. You will be able to imitate this great saint, and that's the whole purpose of her book and of this book and of her life.
What a wonderful thing that would be!
Yeah, all right, great. Yeah, we're really excited when we've got this book. It was published in France. Well, by the way, so of course I'm just the marketing guy. I'm not the author. The author is a French Carmelite, Father Didier Marie Gallet, as it talks about him in the back cover. He's the chaplain of Lisieux, right there where Trez was. He's a Carmelite priest. He is a co-commissioner of an exposition called Trez of Lisieux, Burning with Love, which is an exposition that he takes around France and throughout the world. And a lot of what we find in this book comes from that exposition that he helped put together.
Mm-hmm.
So this man is really a true expert on the life of Trez, and he has all these photos and so forth that he's collected for this exposition that he's put together. And then he also contributed to the building of the St. Trez Memorial at the Carmel of Lisieux. So, you know, he's a real expert on Trez. He's a real Carmelite brother of hers.
You know, of all the photos, and it's funny, the photos are so compelling that at first run through, you just keep turning the pages looking at the photos. There was one on page 119, a photograph of Trez at age 13, which it just... Just seeing her eyes and her expression, obviously she's posing for this photo for whatever reason, but it's like a portrait photo, and it you just feel like you're seeing her soul.
Yeah, I'm looking at the photo right now. It's a very endearing photo of her.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of photos like that of her before and after she went in the Carmelites. If you look at the one on page 121, it's the famous photo where she put her hair up in a style that made her look older because she was going to go meet the bishop. She was only 15, and she wanted to get his agreement, permission to enter the Carmelites. And the pushback was that she was too young. She wasn't ready. They didn't accept 15-year-olds. But she really had this huge desire to be, I mean, she was ready spiritually, but she had to convince the bishop. So she put her hair up. You look at this picture, and it's just really... She does look older, you know. She doesn't look like a 15-year-old, but it's very, you know, you could see where she kind of had this, you know, this cunning,
almost a spunk
spirit, you know?
To her. Yeah, it's just like it looks like a young kid, not young kid, but a young woman, almost going for a first job interview or something.
Yeah. So there's a lot of photos like that in the book, and then of course there's ones of her family, and the thing about Trez of Lisieux is we have to remember that, you know, she didn't become a saint. You know, on her own. She came out of a family that formed her. Her family, her parents are both canonized saints. So
it's quite a family.
An amazing family. Truly an amazing family. Again, a family that people don't really understand. They think, oh, well, she kind of grew up in this very, you know, pious, kind of sheltered family that, you know, they didn't really have much suffering. No, just the opposite. They had a lot of suffering. They had four children that died.
Mm-hmm.
She had four siblings that died.
Mm-hmm.
People forget that. They you know, her mother died when she was in her 40s. Trez lost her mother when her mother was only in her 40s. They did a lot to help the poor and the homeless all the time at their house. They took them into their home. So this living on love was something that she learned from her family life every day. These are really real people, the Martin family. And her father saved, he was a lifeguard, and he actually saved people as a lifeguard. I mean, there's all kinds of stories about this family that are really, you know, inspiring. I mean, both Zelli and Louis, the mother and father, had their own businesses. He was a watchmaker. She was a famous lace maker and a very accomplished lace maker. You know, so they had a lot going on. And yet the family was the focus of everything for them.
Absolutely. Talk a little bit about her great poem, Living on Love.
Yeah, so this book is, as I say, it comes from this poem that she wrote, and it's the first poem that she wrote really for herself. I mean, she usually wrote poems to give to other people. But this is a poem she wrote a couple years before she died that she was just inspired one night after a prayer vigil and so forth. She had this time of silence at night in her cell. And she just had this inspiration to write this poem that, you know, that really encapsulates her whole life, what her life is about, this idea of living on love. And so she wrote it, and it's pretty extensive. It's 15 kind of paragraphs, and it's beautiful. And each paragraph, or at least the first 10 or 12 or something, begin with living on love. What is living on love? And she goes through it and describes what living on love is. And it's just a beautiful meditation on the spiritual life. It kind of summarizes, as I say, what her spirituality was, and something that we can, you know, meditate on, learn from, and then put into practice. But the poem is right here in the books on page 15. They have the whole poem. It's beautiful. It really is beautiful.
Yeah, it's stunning. And again, you talk about her parents. There's some wonderful pictures of her parents. They look like a couple of college professors sitting there.
Yeah, they were quite distinguished, her parents, and they were great. I mean, they're both canonized, so, I mean, what more do you need to say than she had parents who were canonized saints? And by the way, her sister, Leonie, who was one they called the troubled one, Leonie had some behavioral kind of issues, and she was really a challenge for her parents, especially her mother, to raise. Today they might say she had ADHD or whatever. Mm-hmm. Back then they didn't really know what that was. So she was a real challenge for the family. The rest of the girls were all, you know, kind of like Trez. They were, you know, well-rounded and so forth. So everyone kind of went out of their way to kind of try to help with Leonie. And Leonie stumbled through most of her life. She was in and out of convents three or four times, different religious orders. So she could never stay in one. But then she finally got it, and she got it from Trez. It was after Trez died, she received kind of some grace from Trez to grasp really the little way. And she went back to the Visitation Convent, and they accepted her back in, and she stayed there the rest of her life. And she said, I'm the first disciple of my sister. I'm the very first disciple of my sister. I've learned and I put into practice the little way of spiritual childhood. And anyway, what I'm going to say is, she's now, her cause for canonization has been opened. Mm-hmm. So, and she lived a lot longer than Trez. She lived to be 60 or 70. And so she's actually ahead of her other sisters in terms of cause for canonization, the one that was the troubled one. You know, I think that's just a great story, another great story in this family.
Wow. And so Therese died of what? Of tuberculosis?
Tuberculosis. Yep.
Wow. At 24.
Yeah. Yep.
The Lord works in mysterious ways.
And it was a vicious tuberculosis. I mean, she suffered a lot. And not a
very friendly disease to get today. You can imagine back then.
Right. Well, where they didn't have, nearly the... Yep. medical ways of treating it and so forth. And she was in this monastery, which was, you know, was very Spartan. they didn't have any heating system, and it was a tough life. And then to have tuberculosis. She's very fascinating. You know, she's endlessly fascinating to me. I've been a devotee of hers for decades, and when I thought I had it all down, then comes this book and kind of reopens things for me in a new way with Therese of Lisieux. So, you know, she says here, I don't think I read this. She says, I am your sister.
Yeah.
I am your friend. I will always watch over you.
Yep.
And that's what she said she would do when she went to heaven, and that's what she's doing. And, you know, there's this whole thing about her relics. Yeah, I'm sure you remember. Mm-hmm. Her relics became, you know, they take them around the world.
Right.
And wherever her relics go, you know, these huge, huge crowds show up. I mean, you know, tens of thousands of people. And they just, they come to her and they pray, you know, to her where her relics are. And people walk away with these great graces, you know, to learn from this woman and to imitate this woman and to have this woman intercede for your needs. She is our friend. She really is our friend and our sister.
Yeah, I love that quote. I am your sister, your friend. I will always watch over you. That's very comforting.
Yep, that's for sure. Yeah, it's the whole idea of the communion of saints, right?
Yeah,
absolutely. The beauty of being a Catholic, that we are a family. We are a family. We are the mystical body of Christ. We are a family. We are a communion. And you have the church triumphant in heaven, helping we who are in the church a militant here on earth. It's just, it's really is a thing of beauty. It's such a blessing to be a Catholic.
So, you know, obviously the United States, we got kind of a late start on producing saints. But she's she's not an American saint, of course, but is she as popular internationally as she is here in the United States?
Yeah, she definitely is. Yeah, she's universally popular. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Because sometimes it's more of a regional thing. And like I said, we don't have a great number of saints from the United States. It's growing. Well, we don't know how many saints we actually have, but
right.
but canonized, declared saints.
Right. Yeah, we're young. We're young in that regard. We're really a young country, obviously, compared to the European countries.
Exactly.
But Teresa of Lisieux is popular everywhere. That's the beauty of her life and her message, is that she really is universally loved. And, you know, you can look at someone like Francis of Assisi and you can mm-hmm. get that, you know.
Yep.
But again, how did that happen with this woman who has died in a hidden life that no one even knew her? Not like Francis. Francis was pretty well known when he was alive. You
right.
know, he was, you know, but she was unknown. And yet now she's like, you know, the greatest saint of modern times is how Pius X described her, who he himself became a saint. You know, he's a saint, St. Pius X. He called her the greatest saint of modern times. You know, how is that possible?
That's
she's
remarkable.
Not Joan of Arc.
Yeah.
You really have to understand her. You have to read a book like this to see why is she, what is it about her that's so great, and how can we imitate her? How can we learn from her?
Yeah, the imitating, I think, is the hopefully the greatest part of this, is that it will inspire you to imitate her.
Yeah, no, definitely. That's the whole goal of this book and her life, is to imitate her. So imitate her as she imitates Christ. That's what the saints always do, is it's not about them. It's about pointing
right.
us to Christ and learning from them how they, you know, how they imitated Christ. And again, Trez is so accessible. That's the beauty of it. You know, there's so much about her that we can relate to.
And of course, for all our non-Catholic listeners, and maybe a few of our Catholic listeners, we don't pray to the saint to do it. We just ask them to intercede.
Yeah, that's a good clarification. A lot of people don't understand what we mean by praying.
Mm-hmm.
We don't pray to the saints. We pray with the saints. We
right.
ask the saint to pray for us, just like Our Lady. We don't pray to Our Lady, really. We ask her to pray for us. Holy
right.
Mary, Mother of God, pray for us.
Right, exactly.
And that's the communion of the saints. That's the beauty of the communion of the saints, is that we ask them to intercede for us. You know, they're in the presence of God, and they want to intercede for us. You know, so you know, why not take advantage of that? And by the way, speaking of Our Lady, you know, today's her birthday, September 8th. So what a great day!
Oh, that's right.
What a great day to for us to celebrate, and what a great day for you and I to be having this conversation.
With God, there are no coincidences. So,
sure.
Because we were actually scheduled for a different day.
Yeah, we had some problems connecting, mostly because of me. But I'm actually glad that we had them, so we could have this discussion on the birthday of Our Lady.
That's,
what a great day!
That's wonderful. And I've just discovered in this book, as we talk, and you've got it in front of you too, pages 142. How did this happen? You actually got a double truck photo of heaven in this book, right in the middle of this book, 142 and 143.
A double truck.
We call it, and in journalism, two pages is called a double truck of heaven. There it is.
Well, I guess it's it's a miracle.
Look at that.
There's a lot of things that are kind of miraculous about this book and about the story. I guess that photo is one of them.
People are going to have to go buy the book to find out what it is on 142 and 143.
Yeah, definitely looks a little bit like heaven. But, there are places in this world that definitely make you think
they do.
It's got to be somewhat like this in heaven, you know?
For me, believe it or not, it's the California Redwoods.
Well, I definitely believe it. We Redwoods are spectacular.
They really are.
They are spectacular. We actually have a few in my yard.
Oh, do you? Yeah.
I live in Napa.
Kind of almost right at the start of where the Redwoods start. Yep.
What's that?
Almost right at the start of where the Redwoods start. Kind of on the southern end of it.
Yeah, and so this neighborhood where I live, there's a public school here, and I guess, 30, 40 years ago, or 50 years ago, whenever, they handed out these little redwood plants.
Mm-hmm.
Gave them the kids to take home, plant a tree day or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
And, they're all over our neighborhood, big, huge redwood trees.
And they're huge.
I've got three of them in I think I have three. They're huge. They're 80 feet.
Yeah. And that's small for a redwood.
I don't want it any bigger in my yard. But they are spectacular. But yeah, California. We have this such incredible geography.
I know.
Such a stunningly beautiful state.
Every time we're up on the North Coast, in the Diocese of Santa Rosa, by the way, there's one grove of redwoods, and I say to my kids, these go back to the time of Christ. Nobody watered them. Nobody planted them. Nobody watered them. Nobody fertilized them. Nobody tended them. Nobody pruned them. No, all these things we do to plants in our backyard to try to make them grow. Nobody worried about them when the Eel River flooded. No, nobody did anything to them. And look what happened.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's remarkable. Well, Tony, any other great things you want to tell us about that Ignatius Press is doing right now?
Well, I mean,
beyond this, I don't know. You could just retire on this one.
Again, this book is called Saint Therese of Lisieux, Living on Love. I highly recommend it for anybody as for their own reading, but also it's a great Christmas gift for anybody. We're coming out with great books all the time. We have a book. Just right now we're releasing for the fall season. We have a new book by the great Cardinal Robert Seurat.
Mm-hmm.
So as people know, Cardinal Seurat did a book called The Power of Silence, which is a huge seller on the beauty of silence and contemplation. And then he wrote a book called The Day is Far Spent, which he talked about the challenges that are going on in the world of the church right now. And kind of spelled them out, and here's how we respond to them. So this new book's called Couples Awaken Your Love, and it's a retreat that he gave to married couples at Lourdes. And it's beautiful. So the French publisher decided to, with his approval, publish the retreat, and we read it, and we loved it, and so we've brought it out in English, and we just released it. And it's not a big book. It's probably 150 pages, but it's just beautiful. That he gave to married couples about strengthening their marriage and strengthening their love for Christ, their love for their children. And it's just beautiful. Couples Awaken Your Love by Cardinal Seurat. So that's one book. We just released a new book on Dr. Jerome Lejeune. Dr. Lejeune was a scientist. Called A Man of Science and Conscience. He was a French scientist who discovered the chromosomal defect that causes Down syndrome. And his whole goal in doing that was to try to help children with Down syndrome, which he did. He devoted his life to helping them. And he became a collaborator with John Paul II in this whole effort to promote the dignity of human life.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually ended up becoming kind of a man who had to fight against the medical and scientific world because they use that, they use the information that they learned from his discovery to actually,
do the
abort
test.
These children.
Know
ahead of time that, we don't want to have these children born.
The amniocentesis.
So he actually had to then fight that his whole life,
right,
to stand up and defend these babies and these children with Down syndrome. He's really a great man. So we've got this book called Jerome Lejeune, A Man of Science and Conscience. His cause for canonization is open in Rome. He was a father and a husband, just a really great man, and obviously very timely for us today.
How long did he live? When did he die?
When did he die? That's a good question. I think it was in the 90s.
Uh-huh.
If not early 2000. I don't have the book in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
But he's obviously a contemporary.
Right, right.
And then we have a new novel by the great Michael O'Brien, mm-hmm, our most popular novelist, who started off with Father Elijah 25 years ago. And we've got 13 or 14 novels. The newest one's called The Sabbatical. It's about an Oxford University professor who goes on a sabbatical, and which he hopes is just going to be a year of peace and quiet where he can just kind of do gardening in his backyard, etc. But it turns out he's drawn into a kind of a series of coincidences that involve a group of characters from across Europe, including a family that's been the target of an assassination by these mysterious powers. And it's just a kind of a classic Michael O'Brien story where you've got a lot of things going on that are, mysterious, and it's good versus evil, and the whole dimension of faith and suffering that comes in there. It's a page-turner. So The Sabbatical by Michael O'Brien is another new book.
Very talented guy.
And now let me just finalize that. We got a bunch of books, but I know I got to go. But here's one that's interesting. It's on Padre Pio. So talk about another great modern saint. And then you would say, like we thought about Teresa of Lisieux, do we need another book on Padre Pio? Well, this one is, what's unique about this, it's called Padre Pio, Stories and Memories of My Mentor and Friend by Father Gabriel Amorth. And if you remember, Father Amorth was the well-known chief exorcist of the Vatican, the world's foremost exorcist. And we've published a couple of books by him, one called The Exorcist Tells the Story, but he was the most famous exorcist in the world, trained a lot of other exorcists. Well, it turns out that he had this close relationship with Padre Pio, and he considered Padre Pio as his spiritual mentor, and he would go to see him regularly, and they had this friendship and kind of spiritual relationship over 25 years. So here you have this great stigmatic saint, this monk that had the stigma and who could bilocate and all that, and this famous exorcist of the Vatican, and they had this relationship where Padre Pio advised him and counseled him and so forth. And so Amorth has all these great memories in this book, great stories about Padre Pio that are not known. You know, we would never know them because, he's slowly just coming out for him now after he passed away. They have published this book that he wrote, and it's really fascinating stuff. I mean, you get to see these insights about Padre Pio that, you know, only someone like Amorth could have had. And it shows the human side of Padre Pio, his humor, his warmth. He is a storyteller, as it turns out, and of course then the great spiritual gifts that Padre Pio had. I mean, Amorth obviously talks about those as well. So Padre Pio, Stories and Memories of My Friend, Mentor and Friend by Father Gabriel Amorth.
Wow. Well, a lot to, I can say with the St. Therese book, don't wait until Christmas.
Yep.
Do it now.
I agree. We might end up having to reprint it. Then you might have to wait for it.
So. That's right.
It's very popular right now.
Well, it should be. It should be. Tony, yep, thanks for all you do. Always generous with your time with us, and we really appreciate all you do. So thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me on, and it's always good to talk with you. Thanks for the great job that you do on Relevant Radio. And again, I want to give a shout-out to your great producer, Gabe.
Yep, a gift from God.
Gabe is fantastic. He does a great job behind the scenes, and he puts up with me when he tries to get a hold of me, and then I'm not there. So I appreciate his staying with it and finally getting me on the show.
Awesome. Well, God bless you and your family, and I hope we talk soon.
All right. Thank you, Bob.
Thanks, Tony. Hello. That's Tony Ryan, the marketing and sales director for Ignatius Press out of San Francisco, started by Father Fessio 44 years ago. Wow. St. Therese of Lisieux, Living on Love from Ignatius Press. Father Didier Marie Golay, Golay. You can go to your favorite Catholic bookstore, or you can go to Ignatius.com and get this great St. Therese of Lisieux book, Living on Love. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. 1-800-273-8500. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
Hi, this is Laura Lynn, Assistant Director for Lay Formation, and you are listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Welcome back, everyone. Appreciate you being with us on the Bishop's Hour. Together again on fire, the NorCal Jam coming up on Saturday, the 18th of September at Six Flags Discovery Kingdom in Vallejo, 9 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Holy Mass with Bishop Soto presiding. We'll start the day in the morning. Wonderful opportunity for just a lot of faith-filled events. Some wonderful speakers, Sister Josephine Garrett, Father Radmar Jao, Joe Melendrez, who's just a great MC for all of this, pull it all together. Chance for all-you-can-eat lunch and all kinds of fun in the park. Just it can't be beat. Go to onfirenorcal.com. Remember, it's Saturday, September 18, 9 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. Six Flags Discovery Kingdom in Vallejo. If you've never been there, just Interstate 80, where Interstate 80 and Highway 37 intersect, is just about exactly right by the Solano County Fairgrounds as well, if you're familiar with Vallejo at all. KB, you've been off fighting the Caldor fire.
not really fighting it, but yeah, helping out up there for sure.
Well,
definitely,
you know,
not a firefighter.
It's funny because I, you know, when I was college age, I was playing some tennis tournaments in British Columbia, mm-hmm. and finished those. It was in summertime, and my parents were staying at a lake in Idaho named Priest Lake, where, believe it or not, Bishop Wiegand knows a lot about Priest Lake. I think his family had a small cabin or something there.
If you're a bishop, you have to know Priest Lake.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And believe it or not, if you wanted to rent a boat at Priest Lake, you went to Bishop's Marina. That was the name of the marina. Anyway, and the Jesuits had a presence there. They had a retreat there. and anyway, my parents were staying at this small resort there, and I thought, well, I'll go surprise them because I've got a week or so before I'm going to get back to college. And I show up at their little cabin in the resort and knock on the door. That's good to see you. What a surprise, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then next thing I know, there's a knock on the door, and it's the Priest Lake Timber Protective Association, which takes care of all the forests and all that. It's a public entity. And they said, we need people to fight that was the famous Sundance Fire. There was a mountain, Sundance Mountain, and they just didn't have enough bodies. And they looked at me and my tennis shoes and my shorts and said, do you have some boots? And I said, no boots. Can you cook? So you say, you know, you helped out, you know.
Yeah.
So we did a lot of cooking, and then we drive off into the woods on these logging roads and deliver dinner in big milk cans full of steak and mashed potatoes. And then we'd go up in the airplanes, you know, the little single-engine airplane flown by some former World War II pilot, you know.
Of course.
And spot for fires. Mm-hmm. And it was quite the experience.
All jobs you could do in your tennis shoes.
All jobs I could do in my tennis shoes. But
yeah.
I can put it on my resume.
That's
firefighter,
true.
Without lying. Or having to go to confession.
I didn't fight a fire, but because of my other life, my other job is I work as an animal control officer.
So you're law enforcement.
Law enforcement, yes, sir, I am. And I deal with animals,
right.
Obviously. And I have many, many years with animals. I mean, as long as I've been on this show.
It was just about
14 years.
Yeah.
I worked at a vet hospital as a vet tech. I've, you know, things like that. So I'm sort of a all-around animal helper.
Huge animal lover.
Yes, I am. I am both huge and animal lover.
Unashamedly.
Oh, yeah, of course. So part of, obviously, the evacuation is animals. People will either up there, because there's livestock. There was a vineyard up there that was taking people's livestock in. Mm-hmm. And then there was also places where you could go. I forget the name of the reservoir now. It's named after the El Dorado County sheriff.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, I can't think of his name now. It just escapes me. But there's a reservoir there. It's like a little lake. And there were people that were displaced that were staying there. And a lot of their animals were there. Livestock, horses, pigs, goats.
Jenkinson?
No, it's not Jenkinson. I can look it up while we're talking. But anyway... It's his whole family was helping out. As his, I spoke with his daughter while she was there, and there's people there, and there were folks like what you were talking about that were feeding people, and then there was animals, and there was people there tending to the animals. So we went by that day a lot of places because they were repopulating certain places, and we were basically helping people with, hey, you know, do you need food for your animals? Do you need this and that? And then, you know, people who have their animals with them, because you have smaller animals, dogs and cats, hamsters, you know, what have you, you can take them with you if you can keep them on the campground somehow. Sure. And then also we would go to people's homes that were evacuated. They would leave their keys with the sheriff's department or whomever, and then they would get distributed out to animal, and then we would go feed fish and, you know, feed cats and stuff like that. So, yeah, and then some of them you go outside and there's like, you know, like, hey, cats, food is in the barn. Can you please pour some more food for the cat? You know, so stuff like that.
Was there some sort of central place where they were all notified, hey, if you've got animals, we've got a way to help you?
I think with the evac.
When they leave, they're not really worried about the goldfish.
Right. With evac stuff, they do. They say, hey, if you have any animals that need to be left behind, because most people take their dogs.
Sure.
Unless they're outside dogs and they're in an area that they don't think is necessarily going to be affected. But even then, like, so there's a certain kinds of breed, Akbash dogs, Anatolian Shepherd, that are the ones you see out with, not Newfoundlands, but Great Pyrenees. The ones you see out, those big dogs you see out with the goats and the sheep.
Right.
Those dogs are raised with the flock. Mm-hmm. So they don't really know that they're dogs. They just know that they have this protective thing and they have these teeth they can do something about it with.
Right.
So if something comes to the flock where the rest of the sheep run away, they run forward. So it's this weird thing where they think they're sheep or they don't know that they're dogs, but they know they have its protection. So
they ever hold up a mirror and they freak out?
Yeah, exactly. Those dogs end up with the animals. So so typically when you go to the homes, you don't have to worry about dogs. But yeah, it's goldfish, things like that. So they do tell them, like, hey, if you need someone to do this, when they get to wherever they're displaced to, they have people.
What a relief for those people. And it's a double whammy, too, because especially with livestock, cows, horses, sheep, goats, etc., it might keep somebody staying there because they don't want to leave their animals and perishing or really risking perishing in the fire because they didn't want to leave their animals.
Right. Yeah, and that's why they have this thing set up, because it is such a – the barn at the vineyard had over 600 head of animals. I mean, a lot of chickens and geese and ducks and stuff like that. But, yeah, I mean, lots of – there was cows, so a lot of the stuff I was doing was I was taking them out to basically rotate them to get them out, because they're used to being pasture animals. So you put the goats on a leash and you walk them around for half an hour, take the cows out and take them out, take the pigs.
So you're a man who truly does know how to herd cats.
I do. Yeah, I do know how to herd cats. Not nearly as easy as herding goats, but yeah, cats can be herded. But yeah, it was funny, and then of course me being the one who lifts weights out of most people that are there. There was one point when my partner, she and I were walking goats around this vineyard, and there are these really heavy, they're like, cow, they're the mats that go inside of the horse stalls. Stall mats. And okay, so
don't look that heavy.
Right.
Yeah.
And I used to work at a gym, and when we worked at the gym, because one of my other – I have many jobs that I have. I have a lot of part-time jobs until I became an animal control officer. One of the part-time jobs I have was working at a gym, and we have those stall mats that you see in garage gyms. A lot of those are not super heavy. They're heavy, but not super heavy. These are the real thick industrial ones. Mm-hmm. So – as sort of a joke, my partner signed me up to do this because we're walking the goats by and the lady goes, who was running the whole operation, said, hey, if you guys really want to work out, you should lift those stall mats and bring them in here. I had to bring them up this hill into the stall. And my partner she laughed because, I used to compete in the sport of strongman and I lift weights and stuff still. She goes, oh, he likes lifting heavy stuff. He's really strong. And then she walks off.
Yeah.
So I go, okay, I'll bring them up real quick because they're probably the light ones I use in my gym. No, these things are 100 pounds plus.
Wow.
Which is not bad, but they're so floppy.
Big amount. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the mat.
It's not compact.
Like No. So it's the mats themselves are probably about 3 feet by 5 feet, maybe, and by 6 feet.
And floppy.
And super floppy. Like, it's sort of like when you see the, I described it as when you see the diagram of what gravity looks like. Mm-hmm. Like, the four corners of the ends are sitting up straight, and then it just sags in the middle. So even if you had three other people with you, it still would be equally heavy.
Exactly.
And so I lifted the first couple in a kind of very awkward way. So then I figured, okay, I'll roll it from one end sort of like a burrito, and then pick it up and squat it and hold it over my shoulder, which I did. Couldn't really hold it over my shoulder as much as I bear hugged it, kind of. And I get it, and on my arms, I mean, you can see I have a cut on my arm, yeah. And my arms were like red and all swollen, and my face, because I'm on the side, I was like, wow, what happened? And the lady said, oh, hey, thanks for doing those. Those were the ones that were in the pig stall.
Oh, good.
And I was like, oh, well, I just got cut up by them, and I have all this stuff all over me.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's like, oh yeah, the sink is right there. There's antibacterial soap. You're probably gonna want to wash yourself up.
Shower in the
pig stall. Yeah. She's like, well, we bleached him. I was like, did you bleach the underside? She's like, no, I don't think so. I was like, yeah, that's the part I was holding it by. So that was fun. But you know, anything for the animals. So yeah, so I did that. And
can you bench press a horse?
No. Horses are a couple thousand pounds. No, I definitely can't bench press a horse. A pig, maybe a goat. But
so what's the heaviest domestic animal? Is it a horse?
I mean, well, they're not really considered domestics. They're considered livestock. But yeah, I mean, pigs in some cities are allowed as domestics. The city I work, they're not allowed as domestics. Goats can be allowed as domestics, but typically, you know, like a giant dog, like a mastiff, like, you know, you can get mastiffs to be a couple hundred pounds.
Really?
Oh yeah, you can get a big old mastiff. You know,
what
some
about livestock? Would it be a horse?
A cow. I would imagine. Yeah, got to be a cow. Like,
yeah.
A bull.
Yeah.
You know, bulls are gigantic. I had a friend who owns a dairy, and he showed us his bull one night. He came out, ran in the darkness, was like, you know, you want to see something cool? Which, when you're with a rancher, that's never ends well. And he ran out of the darkness, and this VW van with horns came out of the darkness after him. It was huge. I'd never seen an animal that big, because I haven't really been around a lot of livestock. I mean, I have done some livestock stuff, and obviously a lot more this last few days, but you know, I'm a city animal control officer, so I deal with dogs and cats and, you know, Sydney or raccoons and, you know, the occasional coyote and things like that. But, I mean, this thing, I had never seen anything that big. It scared the heck out of me.
People should know that we have set up a fire fund here in the Diocese of Sacramento.
Oh, good.
And
wonderful.
And it's a great way to donate. I mean, it's not just the Caldor Fire, the Dixie Fire. We tend to forget about the 900,000 acre.
The Dixie Fire, yeah, second largest fire in California history.
Yeah, and you know, virtually all of these fires are in the Diocese of Sacramento.
Well, and you know, it's funny you're talking about the food stuff you were bringing. Every day, every command center gets food, and I was there the first morning we got there, and a lady showed up and just started putting a bunch of food. And it was like, you know, protein bars from Costco, and, you know, it wasn't like candy. Like, it was,
yeah,
you know, it wasn't like necessarily the healthiest food in the world, but it wasn't bad for you. But it was definitely stuff that you would use with all the hard work we were doing, because you need the energy. And a bunch of waters and Gatorades. And she said, hey, could everyone get together and take a quick picture? I was like, okay, and we took a picture, and we were like, who is this from? And it was Saint, I can't remember the name, but it was Saint Something Church up there that had donated a bunch of food, and then a bunch more was going to the front line with the firefighters and things like that. So it was, and then like every day there was stuff that was donated, and a lot of times it was donated by churches. So, you know, it's always one of those things where it's wonderful to see how easily it is for churches to step up and do the thing, you know.
Well, you know, you it's number one, you're dealing with people who are by nature generous.
Yeah.
And number two, you're dealing with you know, we've got all the lists, we have all the parishioners, we have phone trees, we have internet now, and you can put out a memo to everybody in the parish. We need this, and boy, the sandwiches, the hot chocolate, it's going to show up right now.
And I've been to places before, like when there was a fire up in Manton, and my mom lived up there, and you drive through the zone, you know, weeks later, and it's devastating. But when you go to, I mean, I was on Grizzly Flat Road. I have a picture of me at Caldor and Grizzly Flat where it started, and I'm driving through that thing looking for injured wildlife. There's a bear that was apparently injured up there that they were trying to find, so Fish and Game could basically, you know, put them out and then figure out what's wrong with them and fix them and then wake them back up. And, you know, you find deer that are deceased and things like that. And some people's animals just ran and they're trying to find them. So you're out looking for them. But to see these houses that are completely, I mean, blocks that are completely gone. And you know it's a block because you see a chimney, a car. And
it's always the chimneys.
Right.
Those are the pictures you see.
And I took a picture of that. And I was trying to be very respectful. I wasn't taking pictures of people to, like, you know, be like, you know, look at the selfie. It was like I wanted to show my wife and my kids, and I also wanted to remember for myself, because what I was going to say was, if you've seen that and then you hear about a fire and you don't do something, it'd be impossible. I mean, it affects you to see that kind of thing. So not that I encourage everyone to go to a burned out area to do it, but what I'm saying is like that. It's not hard to give when you see what it's going towards, right. You know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and you give through the Diocese of Sacramento and Catholic Charities and all these, you know, St. Vincent de Paul. They are all. It's 100% of that's going to go to help the people.
Yeah, and that's great because I mean I met a lot of those people going to those camps and seeing if they needed, you know, giving them food for their animals and things like that, and they were all sort of. It was weird. It was a very mixture of appreciation of everything that's going on, but there was a sort of sadness behind it, obviously, because they were going to go home soon. And then when they get home, some of them have nothing to go home to. They have the chimney.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Literally nothing to go home to.
Yeah. I mean, it was such a strange thing because there was a couple times I drove by cars and I would see everything was burned out, obviously, and the tires were gone. But there was this weird, like, cascading frozen metal. Mm-hmm. By the cars, and I realized it was probably the steel belts that melted.
Oh, sure.
And it's just like you think about, like, metal is melting. Like your house is. I mean,
right.
There are a few houses, oddly enough, that had this, like, I think an over exaggerated defensible space, and a lot of it was like rocks, like, you know, like, mm-hmm. like pebbles and things that they had for landscaping, right. Or, you know, really large driveways that would sort of almost wrap mm-hmm. around, so the whole home was covered by concrete,
right.
Things like that, and those homes were spared.
Yep.
I mean, I'm sure there were probably some that weren't, because you can't tell.
It's just the way the wind blew.
Yeah, exactly.
Last second.
Yeah, well, you would drive and you'd see that the pink fire retardant over, and then you would see a home, gone, home, gone, oddly an ATV that made it, like, weird stuff like that. It was weird. It's such a weird, indiscriminate thing. It's disturbing to see because it's so quiet.
But, you know, you drive up to the mountains on Highway 50, on Interstate 80, before either of the summits,
mm-hmm.
and you will see the little cabin in the woods.
Yeah.
Where you wonder if the sun even shines.
Right.
Because there's so much woods.
Right.
And that's sort of the ideal. You
right.
know,
it is.
And now it's, you know, you need a defensive, you need to cut all those trees down
right.
to have a defensible space.
Yeah, now you want that nice little home in the desert. It's like
right.
it's you like, know, yeah, it's, no, it's my wife and I have been talking about moving, you know, to property for years, and that's the biggest one. My mom, when she moved out of Manton down to, you know, the area where we live.
In Tehama County.
Tehama County, yeah. It's if you go into Red Bluff, you go right into Red Bluff and then you go up.
Like,
you know.
36?
Yeah, 36. Yeah. The long, lonesome road. And, yeah, I mean, and it's, she said that she had this weight lifted every summer that she didn't realize was there. Because every year, I mean, it got within 100 yards, 200 yards of her property one time. And it was just, you know, you never know.
You never know.
And it's so heartbreaking for those people.
And the Cal Fire people will tell you that the fires they've seen this year, they don't respond the way, you know, they have all this,
right.
this knowledge about how a fire responds. And they say, we're seeing fire behavior we've never seen before.
Oh, yeah.
Which makes it 10 times more dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks for doing that, Gabe. That was, that's great stuff. And you're right. Once you see what these people have suffered, it makes you want to give and really care for one another. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone.
To the cross I look, and to the cross I cling. Of its suffering I do. Of its work I do sing. On it my Savior, both bruised and crushed, that God is love and God is just. At the cross you beckon me, you draw me gently to my knees and I am lost for. Through Christ crucified.